Bye-bye.
Much has been written on the beauty of Prague, but I'm not sure that beauty is the right word to apply to this mysterious, jumbled, fantastical, absurd city on the Vltava. There is loveliness here, of course, but a loveliness that is excitingly tainted. In his book Magica Praha, that ecstatic paean of Amor Urbi, Angelo Maria Ripalino figures the city as a temptress, a wanton, a she-devil. The antiquary coquetry with which she pretends to be nothing more than a still life, a silent succession of glories long since past, a dead landscape and a glass ball, only increases her sorcery. She slyly works her way into the soul with spells and enigmas to which she alone holds the key.
Irish writer John Banville, reading an edited extract from his 2003 book, Prague Pictures. A lively, non-fictional account of his experiences of the Czech capital city, which he has been visiting regularly since the 1980s. John Banville is arguably Ireland's greatest living novelist. Besides winning last year's Man Booker Prize with The Sea, he has also written a number of critically acclaimed novels, such as The Book of Evidence, a psychological fiction which was also nominated for the Booker Prize, as well as a number of award-winning books exploring the lives of eminent scientists and scientific ideas, such as Dr. Copernicus and Kepler. The latter novel, about the pioneering German astronomer Johannes Kepler, is a literary tour de force, which vividly recreates the intellectual and social milieu of Rudolfine Prague, where Kepler made many of his most famous discoveries. In this book, Banville's achievement in capturing the atmosphere of Prague is all the more remarkable considering the fact that he wrote it before he actually made his first trip to the city in the 1980s at the height of the Cold War. Since then, he has been back to the Czech Republic on a number of occasions, and these journeys provided him with much of the material for Prague Pictures. I spoke with John Banville in Dublin recently, and started by asking what inspired him to write Kepler and produce such a detailed depiction of Prague in the 17th century.
Well, I wasn't primarily interested in Prague. I mean, I was interested in Kepler because I had I'd already written a book on Copernicus. And at the end of that, I thought, never again would I attempt this kind of book. But then I remembered Kepler's life, and he's a very sympathetic character, very interesting character. And I thought, well, I've got to write a book about him as well. And I thought, will I go to see the places where Kepler was born, where he lived? And I thought, no, I'll invent it. It's much better if I invent. And then, as I think I said in Prague Pictures, I was surprised when I went to Prague to see how closely I had got the place. But then, you know, the older I get, the more I realize the world is not as varied as we thought it was when we were young. You know, most places are much alike. Prague is a strange city, as we know. One of the three great magic capitals of the world, along with Lyon and Turin.
What makes you put Prague into that bracket?
I don't know. There is something slightly sinister about Prague, just as there is about Lyon and about Turin. What struck me first when I went to Prague, and even when I've been to Prague more recently, since 89, and since the opening up of what used to be the Eastern Europe, what used to be behind the Iron Curtain, is the strange quality of silence in the city, where you walk down a main avenue at midday and you can hear your own footsteps. And I was always fascinated by, still am fascinated by, how if you're walking along a boulevard which is full of traffic, you turn to the left or the right into another boulevard which is the same size and in the same area, but it's completely empty. I can never figure that out. Maybe that's something to do with the traffic system in Prague. And those strange little side streets and those strange areas. Prague does stay in the mind, it does stay in the memory. It has a peculiar power, which, as I say, is not quite healthy. There's something slightly off about the place, but that's one of the main reasons that I like it.
Given the range of preoccupation and influence that are apparent in your novels, you've been described as more of a European writer than an Irish one. And, you know, in terms of, like, influence or people you have read, it's obvious from Prague Pictures that you've read Seifert. And you've frequently quoted Milan Kundera on a number of occasions, particularly about in reference to what he calls the passion of the mind. Are there any other Czech writers who have shown up on your literary radar, so to speak?
Oh, I mean, I'm terribly ignorant of Czech literature. It's disgraceful, really. It's a disgrace how little of it is translated in the West. Especially in the English-speaking West, we just don't care about literatures outside the Anglophone world. That's my excuse for saying I don't know as much about Czech literature as I should do. But of course, we know Zweig, not as funny a book as many people find it. I don't think it's terribly funny. And we know who's the guy that invented the robots, Čapek. But, you know, these are the easy ones. I don't know the writers that I should know.
You mentioned there actually about the lack of translations of, like, you know, Czech staples of Czech literature and so on. I was just thinking of looking at it from the other angle. To the best of my knowledge, only the Book of Evidence and the Seed, the so-called Booker duo, have been translated into Czech. And I was just wondering if you think perhaps, you know, sometimes you've been not accused, but people say you have make rather dense use of English, and if that might not be an impediment to the translation of some of your novels.
Oh, yeah, I mean, my books must be an absolute nightmare to translate. I wouldn't want to do it. I had a couple of them in Japanese some years ago, and my wife met a Japanese woman, said that she'd read the books. My wife said, what were the translations like? And this woman said, they're the worst translations I've ever read in my life. She said, when I came here and I read the books in English, I didn't recognize them. So we've no control over these things. But yes, my books are very, very difficult to translate. Very dense language, very elusive. So very difficult to translate.
I wonder just if you sometimes feel trepidation about what your translated work might end up as.
Well, yes. Ben, I mean, you know, one has so many worries that I think that's pretty far down the scale. But yes, I would, of course, worry. I mean, I always remember there's a novel written by John Brain in the 1950s, a working class novel about English life called Room at the Top. It was translated into Swedish as The Attic. So, you know, it's a hostage to fortune.
You mentioned Prague pictures, how you went to Prague in the 1980s at the height of the Cold War, just towards the end of it. And you've since been back on a number of occasions. Is there any change that has struck you in the few times you've been back?
Well, yes. I mean, it is in many ways, in a great many ways, an entirely different city now. But yet, old Prague is still there, even if it's only an echo, but it's a very resonant echo. I can hear the old city still there, the city of Kafka and of Čapek and of Ripolino, who wrote that wonderful Magic of Praha, one of the best things ever written about Prague, about any city, really, wonderful book. But the city that he conjures up is, I think, still there. As to how long it will last, I don't know. And, you know, when I was there in the early 90s, they were building that McDonald's just at the Charles Bridge, and, you know, everybody was expressing great outrage about it. But I thought to myself, well, why not, you know? The kids were thrilled with themselves. And I thought, you know, why shouldn't they have Levi's? Why shouldn't they have hamburgers? You know, why should this be exclusive to the West? Why should we expect that what we used to call Eastern Europe, and which, of course, Eastern Europeans say, as a friend of mine said, where does Eastern Europe start? You know, does it start at Prague or Vienna or Paris? Or, you know. So, of course, he was right to rebuke me with that. There is just Europe, and there always was. There was, the Soviet bloc. That was a completely false border that was cut down the middle of Europe. So I don't see why the young in Prague or Budapest or Warsaw shouldn't be allowed to go to hell in a handcart if they want to. They do it everywhere else, and they have great fun doing so. And then they get older and they get, well, let's say wiser. But they certainly change, as they will in Prague as well. It's a kind of sentimentality. It's a kind of nostalgia for a fake version of Prague or of Budapest or of Warsaw that we in the Western capitals harbour, you know, and it's stupid, you know, and it's very unfair. It's one of the things that kept Eastern Europe being Eastern Europe and behind, you know, the walls that the Soviet Union had put up is our sentimental notion of it. That somehow all the Pragers and the Budapesters and the Warsaws, that they were somehow ennobled by their suffering. But suffering doesn't ennoble, you know. Suffering is just painful, and that's it. So I think a lot of sentimentality went into our view of what we used to call Eastern Europe, and I'm glad that's over.
At the risk of sounding flippant, speaking of suffering, you had some very interesting things to say about Czech food and your experiences of, the creations of Czech chefs.
Well, I hesitate to talk about Czech food. As I said, you know, Czech Republic and Prague in particular, very, very beautiful places. The people are very sweet, wonderfully cultured, very friendly. But my God, how they eat that food, I do not know. It is surely the most disgusting cuisine in the world. At least I find it so. But then, you know, the opposite of it was, I remember the last time I was there, I went to a very fancy French restaurant, extremely expensive French restaurant in Malastana. And it was just awful. It was just as pretentious and bad as any fake French restaurant anywhere else in the world. So that reconciled me a bit to Czech food. But and then, you know, I mean, one eats badly anywhere. I'm doing my best here not to be too rude about it, but oh my God, that Czech food.
Dumplings in particular seem to kind of catch your imagination.
Oh no, dumplings they're not exclusive to Prague. You know, I've had to eat dumplings in Bavaria, for instance, which were just as disgusting as anything a Prague chef can make. I suppose this is peasant food. You know, the workers in the fields needed these big, heavy dumplings and things to eat, but God, don't offer them to me.
Do you still maintain any links or contact with Prague and the Czech Republic?
I have a friend there. I've kind of lost touch with him, which I regret. One of the problems at my stage of life is that I travel so much and I meet so many people that you can't keep up, you know. You almost can't afford to make friends now in the cities that one goes to. But I do, I mean, it's not a pose on my part. I do have a tiny little glow somewhere inside me that is a kind of, almost a kind of sorrow for, that is Prague. I miss it in a way that I don't miss, I think, anywhere else in the world. I've only ever felt this about cities in which I've fallen in love in. And people say you can only come to know a city if you fall in love there with somebody from that place. And I've done that in a few cities in the world. That never happened to me in Prague, unfortunately, because Czech women are so beautiful. Didn't happen to me there, but I still feel that same kind of, I don't know what, I can't find any other word than sorrow, even though sorrow is a very big word, but I do still have that little pilot light of longing for the city and the Multiba.
Irish writer John Banville, ending the latest edition of Czech Books. That's all we have for you in today's programme, but before we go, I'd like to remind you that you can catch up on any reports you might have missed this week by visiting our website at www.radio.cz. That's www.radio.cz. From me, Colin O'Connor, and everyone here at Radio Prague, goodbye.